Welcome back. Hour number two of your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. In for Mike this week for Thanksgiving week. He'll be back with you on Monday. Until then, you got me at least through Wednesday. And then some encore Malloys on Thursday and Friday. We are broadcasting live from the left coast, as we always do. Our phone number is 877-520-1150, although we will be joined by a guest shortly. Howie Klein from Down with Tyranny will be joining us, but you may want to talk to him about the makeup of the upcoming Congress after these insane elections that, as we discussed in the last hour, are still going on, at least in the state of Florida. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. You can reach me on the Twitters at the Brad Blog, and you should stop by the bradblog.com chat room. Once again, my thanks to Scribble Live for supplying us with the chat room today. A lively bunch as usual over there. Go over to bradblog.com, the top item, you'll find it. Click on through and find our live chat room there. All right. Any other business I have to take care of? Okay. Very good. Oh, we got Howie, and Howie's here. Okay. Superb. Well, listen, it's been a while since we had our friend Howie Klein on, but, you know, I've been so buried trying to make sure that we had an election and that people got to vote that I haven't been able to pay much attention, frankly, to the politics. I know we had some good news. A lot of progressive initiatives passed, marriage equality in three different states, and in another state turned down a ban on marriage equality. They're ending the drug war, it seems, in part, in at least two states, Colorado and Washington, where they can now have recreational marijuana. Not just medical marijuana, but recreation. You'll be able to buy it in a coffee shop. It'll be like Amsterdam, which is, of course, what people who are against it are afraid of. But I've been to Amsterdam. It's a great city. I love it in Amsterdam. If Colorado was like Amsterdam, that would be fine by me. In any case, so I haven't had time to understand a lot of the politics that are going on. However, that's what Howie Klein does. And there is no one, as far as I'm concerned, who understands the politics, the inside, frankly, the inside politics of how all of this plays out, than Howie Klein, my next guest, the proprietor from DownWithTyranny.com. He also runs the Blue America Pact at ActBlue.com. Hey, Howie, welcome back, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Nice to see you.
Great to have you here. All right, before I get into some of this, this must be a typo on your Act Blue page. It says you raised $353 million.
We only raised slightly over $3 million.
Okay. I think that's a typo. $3 million. What? And that's since 2004, right?
Five.
Okay, now what does that actually go towards? Is this one of those?
All of the money doesn't actually go to us. It goes directly to the candidates that we endorse. So our candidates get most of it. Some people also give money to our PAC, and that money we use in specific campaigns. Like, for example, we were trying to defeat Buck McKeon from the Santa Clarita Simi Valley, Antelope Valley, part of California. So it's the northeast corner of Los Angeles County and a little bit of Ventura. So we were trying to defeat him. He's the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee and one of the most corrupt members of Congress and a really great young surgeon, Lee Rogers, was running against him. Hopefully he'll run against him again in 2 years. And we bought a lot of advertising. We had mobile billboards and radio ads and things like that. So that's what we use the money that we get. But almost all of the money, I'd say probably of the 3.2 million dollars that we raised, mm-hmm. something like 2.5 million of it or 2.6 million of it went directly to candidates. So people just to look at our page, they see who we endorse, and they just give the money directly to the candidate.
Now, does this
encourage?
Is this that that secret dark money that comes from a handful of millionaires and billionaires? That is that where you're raising all your money, Howie?
Oh, there's no secret anything. Everything is very. That's a different kind of a committee, and we don't have one of those.
Okay.
We do have a super PAC, but it's, everything's out in the open. All the names are disclosed. We all, you know, we all tell who we are.
Wow.
And all that money is completely transparent.
How old-fashioned of you, Howie?
We are very old-fashioned.
Okay.
We believe in certain values, and we don't want to compromise them.
Well, good for you. You're the only one, apparently. So, Howie, tell me this before we get to... let's start here. You heard me mention, about marriage equality in four separate states and the marijuana.
You didn't mention
stuff.
Massachusetts, though.
Did Massachusetts lose?
It wasn't pot for pleasure.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
Medical marijuana.
That's right, and it lost in Massachusetts.
Oh, it did?
I believe it did.
Oh, I thought it won. I'm sorry.
I think it lost in Massachusetts for medical marijuana, but I believe that it – but it certainly won in Washington and Colorado. So
yeah.
Maybe that's why I didn't mention it. But – okay. Before – but so there was a lot of positive progressive results. So before we get to some of the more disturbing things that I suspect you'll bother me with, what are you encouraged by? The positive stuff. What are you encouraged by after the election 2012?
Well, obviously the Senate is a more progressive place, and that's a really good thing. We've elected two outstanding women two that I'm nuts about, Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. Also, Mazie Hirono in Hawaii is very, very good also, like excellent. I should put her in the same category.
Oh, good.
So we've elected a far more progressive Democratic majority in the Senate. Now, lots of really awful Democrats were elected too, but that always happens. But what doesn't always happen is that we elect really good progressives, and we've elected among the best. I mean, no one is going to be better than those three women I just named.
Okay, so your feeling is we can expect a more progressive Senate overall because of 2012.
Slightly more, yeah, slightly more progressive. And it's funny because I actually have a post that I did a little while ago that's coming out tomorrow morning about that, where I compare one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Even the guy in Connecticut who won a seat, he's not really Chris Murphy. He's a new Dem. He's not really, really what we call a progressive. But who is he replacing is Joel Lieberman. Is he more progressive than Joel Lieberman? Much, much more progressive than Joel Lieberman.
Okay.
Even when you look at a Republican like the one who won in Arizona, Jeff Flake.
Right.
Now, Jeff Flake is kind of a libertarian type, and he's could be a crackpot in some ways. But is he better than John Kyle, who he's replacing? Yes, he's much better than John Kyle. And there's even a chance that he may make deals now and then where John Kyle would never make a deal with anybody for anything. He's just an obstructionist who wants
right.
to stop everything.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's a very positive way to look at that. I hadn't thought about it that way. Okay, so that's the Senate. Encouraging news in the Senate. Let's move on over to the House.
That's what we specialize in at Blue America anyway,
yeah.
is the House.
And you wrote about this at Down with Tyranny. You wrote, just to quote you here real quick, you said, one of the reasons why it was so important that Nancy Pelosi decided to stay on as House Minority Leader was because what is building up behind her to take over the House Democratic Caucus? The threat of the Blue Dogs is dead, at least for now, but the Blue Dogs have morphed into the New Dems, a corporately financed coalition of big business shills within the Democratic Party. What's the difference, Howie Klein, if you don't mind explaining, between the sort of the Progressive Caucus and the Blue Dog Democratic Caucus and now the New Dems, which I thought went out of style when Bill Clinton left, but I guess not. I guess the New Democrats are still around.
They very much are still around, and they're trying to make a big play to take over the Democratic House caucus, and so far are succeeding, and we can get into that in a little while. But I'd like to answer your question first about what the differences are between the three caucuses.
Good.
First of all, the Blue Door caucus is all but dead. There are only 14 members left. They elected one guy, Pete Gallego from Texas. He's the only new Blue Dog. The rest of them, you know, were all defeated over the last few years. More defeated and were defeated this year. A lot of them retired this year. So there's really not much left of the new Dems. There are 14 new.
Blue Dogs, right?
There's 14 Blue Dogs left. Half of them have also joined the new Dems. The way I like to describe it is the new Dems are basically the Blue Dogs without the sheets, the white sheets, and the pillowcases over their heads. So they're not exactly the KKK. They're not anti-gay necessarily. They're not anti-choice necessarily. They're not social conservatives. They're just fiscal conservatives. It's a generally kind of corrupt, shady group who put
money.
The
Blue Dogs, you're saying that they were social conservatives as well as fiscal conservatives, but the new Dems are basically only fiscal conservatives.
Yeah, well, of course, there were some bigots and racists and homophobes, et cetera, in the new Dems also.
Mm-hmm.
Because those kind of people tend to be, but there are also some people who are socially liberal and quite progressive on a social level in the New Dems. So the New Dems have both social conservatives and progressive, socially progressive people. But what binds them together, the New Dems together, is that they are economically and fiscally conservative. They're pro big business. They're corporately funded. They will. Anyone on that in that group would sell their grandmother for a nickel.
And they seem to be gaining power right now in the House. We're going to take a quick break.
Gigantically.
And we're going to take a quick break, come back and talk with Howie Klein exactly about that. By the way, I'm told that Massachusetts voters did approve the ballot measure to legalize medical marijuana. Howie,
I wrote that, and I was thinking I'm going to have to find my article and change it.
You have it right. I believe I had it wrong. At least that's what our producer, Desi Doyen, tells me. All right, take a quick break. Come back with more Howie Klein and your calls, by the way, 877-520-1150. This is Brad on The Molloy Show.
Long-distance information, give me Memphis, Tennessee.
All right, welcome back to the Mike Molloy Show. Brad in for Mike tonight. And just to clarify, we're speaking with Howie Klein. We'll be back to him in a second. But to clarify, so recreational marijuana did win in Colorado and Washington, and medical marijuana was approved by the voters in Massachusetts. However, medical marijuana failed in both Arkansas, okay, not entirely a surprise, and Oregon. What's up, Oregon? What's up with that? We don't know, and we probably won't get an answer because Portland's KPOJ is gone. All right, welcome back to the show, Howie Klein.
Hey, wait a second about Oregon there for a second.
Yeah, what? What you got?
They were trying to, it wasn't medical marijuana. They were trying to remove all restrictions on marijuana. They've got a bill already that medical marijuana is fine there. They were, I believe what they were trying to do this time was just make it something that had to be, that had no crime attached.
Decriminalize it, right.
And make it just something anybody could use anytime they wanted.
Right.
No restrictions.
Right, but that failed.
Yeah.
In Oregon. All right.
Right.
It'll pass soon enough. Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com and ActBlue.com talking about the makeup of the incoming Congress. What are we up to, 111th Congress now, Howie? 12th? Where are we?
13th.
13? I think it's 13. All right. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. We were discussing in the last segment that, in fact, the Senate will be at least slightly more progressive, maybe not so much in the House. And Howie wrote about it recently at downwithtyranny.com. So explain to me the threat. We talked about the difference between the blue dog Democrats who are almost out, and you've been working, I know, at Act Blue. You've been primarying those blue dog Democrats for some years, trying to get them out, haven't you?
And we've been successful.
Yeah.
We've helped to defeat a number of them. This year, we helped replace two really awful blue dogs with two very, very good progressives. So that was a big success we had. Last time, we actually defeated Bobby Bright, the worst of the blue dogs. In Alabama, it was really Blue America that defeated him, no one else.
And so now with the blue dogs all but gone, the ones that are left have joined over with the new Dems, who I had thought were gone.
Yes, seven of them are now part of the new Dems.
Okay, and the new Dems, they differ from the blue dogs in that they are both fiscally conservative, but the new Dems aren't quite as socially conservative as the blue dogs.
That's right. The new Dems are split. There are some socially progressive new Dems, and there are also conservative, socially conservative new Dems. But all the new Dems are fiscally and economically conservative. They're corporate-oriented, big business-oriented Democrats who take their cues from Wall Street.
Okay, and now this puts these new Dems in a House which is controlled by the Republicans. It kind of puts the and with this so-called fiscal cliff coming up. If I understand what you wrote about, what you're sort of warning us about, is that these new Dems are now in a position to make deals with the Republicans, right?
Republicans are actually trying to bolster them wherever they can. So, for example, right now the Democrats are picking their leadership team. So when most people think of the leadership team, if they think about it at all, they think, all right, Nancy Pelosi, and maybe they think Steny Hoyer. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. There are lots and lots of other offices that you don't hear about. So a very, very important one is coming up, which is the vice chairman of the Democratic House Caucus. And you've got, on the one hand, an iconic progressive, Barbara Lee.
Versus,
you know who she is.
I do, but don't tell us who she's being challenged by, because I got to get to a quick break. We'll come back, have a nice long segment. Speaking with Howie Klein from downwithtyranny.com. Our phone number is 877-520-1150 if you want to get in on the conversation. Brad from Brad Blog, in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Oh, yeah.
Going to love this. Just love it.
Stuck in the Middle with you, right here on the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, speaking with Howie Klein, the great Howie Klein, I should say, of DownWithTyranny.com. They're in the, by the way, in the BradBlog.com chat room, thanks to Scribble Live, by the way. Thank you, ScribbleLive.com. They're talking about bacon. So you can go check them out, BradBlog.com. Jump into the chat room and see what all the pork is about. All right, welcome back, Mr. Klein. We were talking about, okay, so we've established the difference between the New Dems and the Blue Dogs. The New Dems aren't quite as bad as the Blue Dogs because the New Dems are fiscally conservative but not socially conservative. But the New Dogs, the New Dems appear now to be taking over some leadership positions and will have a whole bunch of control of the Democratic caucus, it sounds like, when the new Congress comes in. So the leadership challenge you were talking about before we went to the break, Howie, was the progressive Barbara Lee versus who and for which post?
Joe Crowley. It's for the vice chair of the caucus, and it's Joe Crowley. Joe Crowley is the Democratic machine boss of Queens in New York City. He's probably the most corrupt Democrat in Congress. He would probably have gotten in really big trouble. He was dragged before the Ethics Committee, but they wanted to get a Republican off, so they just did a trade. They took off one, they got let one Republican go, and they let him go. But he's a very, very corrupt guy, an awful guy. He was the chairman of the New Dems, extremely conservative, fiscal conservative, and just an awful person all around. She's perfect. So we're talking about not like, you know, a B and a C. We're talking about an A and an F. He's as bad as they come. She's as good as they come.
And what does...
And he has spent $2 million trying to persuade members to vote for him. So he's given pack checks to all his colleagues with the idea that they'll vote for him. So it's a real big problem. So, you know, all this talk that's going on now about how the Democrats are, you know, so they're now controlled by women and minorities, and, you know, there's, you know, such a big change. Well, they're about to not elect one of the most outstanding women to have ever served in the House of Representatives, an African-American brilliant woman who's incredible and heroic, and put instead one of the worst hacks that's been elected to Congress in decades.
Howie Klein, what effect does a vice chair of the Democratic caucus, what kind of power do they have? And
I'll tell you exactly what kind of power.
Okay, and then I want to know.
Power is being part of the leadership. Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn are like the older generation. They're all, you know, they're all on their last few years in mm-hmm. Congress, however many years it's going to be. It's not going to be that many. They're elderly. So they're already tweeting Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Joe Crowley as the coming leaders of the party. They're treating them as though they are already the coming leaders of the party. The reason I started bringing this up to you was because what I was saying is that the Republicans are trying to boost these new Dems in their positions. For example, they've actually come out and endorsed more conservative Democrats for Democratic leadership posts where they have nothing to say in it, but yet they're saying, hey, this is a much better candidate. Well, who are they saying are the better candidates? They're saying the ones who vote with Republicans all the time. So right here in Los Angeles, for example, we saw a dozen Republicans from John McCain and that gay sidekick of his from South Carolina and Buck McKeon and all these terrible reactionary Republicans all endorsing Berman over Sherman, because Sherman is more progressive and Berman was less progressive, so they wanted Berman. As it turned out, Democratic voters didn't fall for that, and they voted for Sherman. But now Sherman wants to be the head of the House Arms, the Democratic leader of the House Armed Services Committee, but he is what you call, I'm sure you've talked with your listeners about this in the past, he's what you call a fair trade advocate rather than a free trade advocate. And the Republicans want a free trade advocate, so they've endorsed Elliot Engel, a new Dem from New York, who is, you know, more conservative. He's a new Dem, and he's a free trader, whereas Sherman is more progressive, and he is a fair trader.
So
the Republicans are pulling this kind of shtick all over, trying to have influence inside of the Democratic caucus.
Well, I was going to say, how does the Republican caucus actually come out and say, we endorse such and such for the Democratic?
They whisper to their friends and say, hey, you know, let's be bipartisan. Let's elect someone who can work with us together. We'll all work together. But, you know, what they really want to do is get Democrats who kiss up to Republicans and who support the Republican agenda.
Howie, you talked to
what they mean by bipartisan.
You mentioned Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Is she part of the list of new Dems?
Usually when these people assume leadership roles, they leave their caucuses. So, in other words, when Nancy Pelosi was a progressive, she was part of the progressive caucus. In fact, she was the leader of the progressive caucus for a long time. But when she went to be the majority leader, with the minority leader first, she left it. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz was a new Dem, and then when she came to the leadership, she left that. And that's the normal thing. Even Crowley, the one who I talked about who's running against Barbara Lee, he left his position as the chairman of the new Dems and in expectation of winning this leadership position. And what it does, like I said, is it puts them in it puts them on track to possibly be speaker or to be whip or to be majority leader. So that's what the problem is. They don't just pick someone. Like, you know, people say to me, well, why don't they pick Alan Grayson? He's the best, and he just got reelected. Well, he is the best. But they don't just pick someone out of the pack. They follow a seniority pattern.
Howie, was this when we heard little Tim, what's his name? Now I'm forgetting his name, from NBC, the son of Tim, yes, little Timmy Russell, or what's his first name? His son's name, Tim Russert's son. Anyway.
Right. I know you mean.
Little baby Russert. When little baby Russert the other day asked Nancy Pelosi, are you guys too old? Are you too old? Should you be making way for younger leadership, younger folks to come in? Was that part of this scheme? Was he being put up to this either by the new Dems or Luke Russert? That's it.
I don't know that he's been put up to anything. It's more like he's part of that mindset. There's no ruling party. The ruling clique in Washington is what's called the conservative consensus. And the conservative consensus is basically the Republicans, not just in Congress, but the Republicans who stay there forever in think tanks and the media and in the consultant world, mm-hmm. the pundit world. So them and the Democrats who are also part of that world, that's the conservative consensus. It's everybody but the progressives. And Russert is certainly part of that, and that's where his mind is, and no one has to put him up to anything. It comes to him quite naturally.
And what's the danger here? I talked a little bit about the so-called fiscal cliff. Explain
to
me.
Don't call it that. Please.
I know. What should we call it?
Call it the fiscal curve. Slope.
Okay.
The gentle fiscal slope.
Okay. The gentle fiscal slope. Now, deals are going to have to be made, they say, because there's going to be huge cuts in both defense, which sounds fine to me, and social spending, which doesn't sound quite as fine. The tax rates are going to go up unless there's a deal, yada, yada. But how are these new Dems now positioning themselves to work with the Republicans in the House? Because obviously, if they're going to have a deal, somehow they're going to have to get a deal with the Republican House and the Democratic Senate and the White House. So how are the new Dems positioning themselves to screw this entire thing up somehow?
Right. Well, screwing it up wouldn't be a bad idea. But the new Dems are more likely to work with Obama and the Republicans. The progressives don't want this kind of deal. Listen, if there's no deal in the lame duck session, then what happens is the Bush tax cuts disappear.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good thing, because then that won't be a part of the overall deal that they make.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't have that as a bargaining chip, and that's a good thing. So the idea would be if the Bush tax cuts evaporate, which happens automatically if nothing happens.
Right.
Then in January, the Democrats come back and they say, okay, let's give 98% of Americans a tax break. And how are the Republicans going to say no to that? They won't be able to. They literally will not be. If they do, we're even better. The Democrats are even better.
Okay, so what is the danger then of these very conservative Democrats making a deal with the Republicans? What are you worried about? What kind of deal are you concerned about?
They'll make a deal that cuts back on benefits for working families. So they'll cut back, probably on Medicare. They'll raise the retirement age. They'll do things like that that tries to balance the budget, which was, after all, not caused by Medicare, or let's put it like this, not caused by Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really the reason for the deficit is because of the Bush tax cuts
and the wars.
The Bush unpaid for wars.
Right.
Those are the reasons why the budget is so wildly unbalanced, because remember, it was balanced, at least theoretically, under Clinton when Bush came in, and then Bush screwed it all up by giving tax cuts for the rich and by having unpaid for wars. And now they want to make working families pay for that. Never mind that it should be the rich who pay for it, if anybody, since they were the ones that benefited from all this. But now you hear Obama saying, We just want to take a little tiny, tiny, tiny bit from the rich. And he means it, just a little tiny, tiny bit. And everybody's got to shoulder part of this burden. I don't believe that elderly and poor people should be sharing any part of the burden. They've been sharing the burden all along. That's, they always get the burden. You know, I did a post the other day about a grand bargain that took place in 980 A.D. And this is a grand bargain in France where they scared the daylights just like by saying fiscal cliff, we're all going to fall off the fiscal cliff. They were scaring people back then, the elites of France in those days, that if the peasants, the working people of France didn't give up their freedom and become serfs, the whole world was going to end. And they got everybody so crazy that all of these people literally, voluntarily made themselves into serfs. That was the grand bargain in the 980s A.D.
Well, that
and
now, sounds...
And what they're trying to do now isn't that different from that.
Yeah, sounds very familiar. Okay, I got to take a quick break here. We'll come back with one more quick segment with Howie Klein. And your calls at 877-520-1150. By the way, the next hour, all calls, all open line. Oh, maybe a visit from Desi Doyen to tell us how BP got away with murder, literally, 11 times. But 877-520-1150, anything you want to talk about, I'd love to hear from you. I'll wait till I come back. I wanted to get Howie's quick take on Patrick Murphy down in Florida. I know he's got some very sharp opinions on the man who may be the newest congressman from Florida 18. And, yes, it's not too early for a preview of 2014 as guys like Al Franken come up for re-election once again. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Howie Klein staying with us, and I hope you will, too. We'll be right back.
Every town has its ups and downs. Sometimes ups outnumber the downs, but not in hand.
Ah, nice. Welcome back. This is your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. In for Mike. Speaking for just a few more minutes with Howie Klein, and then we will go to your calls at 877-520-1150. Anything you'd like to talk about. These are your public airwaves. Please use them before you lose them more than you already have. 877-520-1150. I've got plenty, of course, to talk about in the next hour, and Desi Doyen is on standby to talk about BP, but... if you'd like to preempt us all with your thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. 877-520-1150.
Okay. Have you talked with your audience about the fact that the Democrats won more House votes than the Republicans, but because of Republican gerrymandering, they have less seats?
I have not actually mentioned that specific point, but yeah, they got more votes, and it's good timing because For Earth in our bradblog.com chat room had just typed in a question basically asking how much did gerrymandering affect the election?
Well, let's take two really important states, Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So as everybody knows, Obama won Ohio narrowly, but let's just say he won 50%. He won a little over 50%,
mm-hmm.
and he won Pennsylvania quite a bit more than 50%. The other statewide races were also won by Democrats. Sherrod Brown won a very resounding victory over mm-hmm. The kook that the Republicans had, and Bob Casey won a resounding victory over the kook that the Republicans had in Pennsylvania. So statewide, Democrats were out voting. They voted more than Republicans,
right.
And more of them voted. But in Ohio, there are 16 seats. So you figure the 16 seats, the Democrats should have won at least 8 or 9? No, they won 4 out of the 16.
Right.
In Pennsylvania, they have 18 seats, so the Democrats should have won 10 or 11. Instead, they won 5.
But
so the gerrymandering is gigantic. And by the way, it's on both sides. You know, it's not only the Republicans.
Well, I was going to say, in California here,
in
California, the Democrats got a
In California, it was not gerrymandered. It was a nonpartisan commission. So it was done. It was done in a fairer way, and it wasn't done for partisan reasons. In Ohio and in Pennsylvania, the Republican legislature and governor drew the races for the reason, you know, for the specific goal of enhancing the number of seats that Republicans could win. In California, it was a nonpartisan commission, bipartisan commission, so it was a different kind of situation.
No.
In Illinois, on the other hand, where the Democrats control both the governor's house and the state legislature, mm-hmm. they drew it so as to harm Republicans.
Now, Howie, Four Earth notes that the gerrymandering affects down-ticket races, props and judges, but I don't know that it does it? Isn't that only really affect the House races versus...
Oh, because they gerrymander assembly seats and state Senate seats as well.
Okay.
Yeah, they definitely gerrymander everything they can, and especially state legislative seats, because those are the people that are doing the gerrymandering.
But not
necessarily very concerned about
but
that.
But not necessarily, it doesn't affect ballot initiatives and judges and so forth.
Well, it certainly can't affect anything that's a statewide thing.
Okay.
Only things that have districts. You know, Arizona we think of as a red hellhole, but yet in Arizona, because there is some kind of good government movement, I'm sure you're aware mm-hmm. of that, and because of that, there are now more Democrats than there are Republicans elected to Congress. The Democrats have 5 members, and the Republicans have 4 members.
Howie Klein, I've got just a minute or two, and I want to get in 2 quick questions here. One, I had mentioned Patrick Murphy. I've been covering this race in great detail at bradblog.com between him and Alan West and the fight to count the ballot so that everyone can know who won and who lost. But you and so Alan West is obviously a crazy right-winger, but I argue that he and his supporters deserve a fair count. Patrick Murphy, on the other hand, the Democrat who appears to be poised to win, you say he's not so Democratish after all.
No, he's not. He's a lifelong Republican. He only changed to the Democratic Party a few months ago so he could run. He's a spoiled rich kid. His father just bought him this election. His father started a PAC. The PAC did one thing, which is pump money into his campaign and put negative ads out about Alan West. I have no sympathy for Alan West. Alan West is a war criminal. He deserves all the worst. But they're two terrible candidates. Patrick Murphy is going to be voting with Republicans. He is a Republican at heart, and there's nothing about him that's a Democrat. He's already joined the New Dem coalition.
And Howie Klein, I got 10 seconds. Who's Al Franken going to be running against in 2014?
Let everybody hope altogether that it's Michelle Bachmann.
Howie Klein from DownWithTyranny.com and the Blue America Pack, ActBlue.com. Always great to talk with you, Howie. Have a great holiday, my friend, and I hope to see you soon.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye, Brad.
All right. That's Howie Klein. We're coming back with your calls at 877-520-1150. This is Brad in for Malloy.